draw places to sleep tonight, and men banging on their car at midnight, demanding they wake up and move somewhere else.
Using sex to make her sad. The Supreme Court was so upset they sent him off to jail. Maybe we should help the fiend and take away his fine. But we're busy reading Playboy and the Sunday New York Times, and I'm sure it wouldn't interest anybody outside of a small circle of friends. Smoking marijuana is more fun than drinking beer. But a friend of ours was captured and they gave him 30 years. Maybe we should raise our voices, ask somebody why. But demonstrations are a drag, besides we're much too high. And I'm sure it wouldn't interest anybody outside of a small circle of friends. To the bushes, and now she's being stabbed. Maybe we should call the cops and try to stop the pain. But Monopoly is so much fun, I'd hate to blow the game. And I'm sure it wouldn't interest anybody outside of a small circle of friends.
Again, the silver-toned Felix from Chords of Fame, the album from the 60s. Well, so much to play, so little time to play it. Let's skip to the forum on campus on last Thursday night when Charles Vaughn Jr., also known as Aluti Chibuti Res, I think I have that right, maybe not, which he spoke about the death of his father and what we need to do. Much of this recording, unfortunately, which I'd hoped to bring back to those who went to the Happy John Memorial down at the town clock and then later at Happy Corner, is not audible. But this is audible because the man speaks so strongly. Let's hear him and see what we can do.
Yeah.
always, whenever I come to one of these events, the first thing I do, I start writing things down. You know, it's like, I want to talk about this, I want to talk about that, but for some reason, I never really get to. The one thing I would like to start and say is that this is actually a happy time for me to come back to Santa Cruz. I was actually raised here as a kid, up in the family housing. I wish I could be like the Garcia family. We have a father and team, tag team. One misses something, another one hollers something out. You know, it's like, oh, you're not doing that right. I hear it all the time. So I kind of miss that because of my father was taken from me so suddenly. And so I have that in the back of my head when I see these guys working together. You know, I really appreciate that. Let me give you a quick overview. And I see like the brothers and sisters sitting in the back, you know. I remember when my father was a student here, going to Merrill College. He got his bachelor's degree from here. When I was sick, and I couldn't go to daycare, so he would bring us and we would sit in the back of the class. We would sit in the back of the class. And he paid for the scribble and stuff like that. And so this is a happy return for me. This is a very happy return. The times have changed a little bit, but it's a very happy time. I'm a part of the Charles Vaughn Senior Foundation. And one thing he mentioned was that I was the chair of the Charles Vaughn Senior Task Force. Actually, Mel Mason is actually the chair of that. I'm the chair of the Charles Vaughn Senior Foundation. So there's a couple of different organizations that I make it distinguished because one of them originated out of the community, and that's the Mental Health and Police Practice Task Force, which is very, very important. They do work that I couldn't even conceive of because of the amount of time and the amount of correlation building and the amount of energy that is required to keep that going. So there are different forces going on. I was raised in an activist family. I was very fortunate from the very beginning to have an understanding of the different forces that actually play a role as far as how I fit into the society and what type of outlook I would have. I would like to just mention to the attorney, you guys don't know how rare it is to have one of the hardest things for the family group to get is a good attorney. Someone who will stand up for the people. So I know sometimes we have problems with attorneys, but let me tell you, for those of us who have actually lost something so dear to us, it is very good to see someone stand up and say, you know, I would just like to let the people know that she pays the cost too. And tonight is really about what? Happy John. Let's get down to business here, okay? So when we spend a lot of time going in these different directions, Happy John died at the hands of police misconduct. Let's not make any mistake how and why he died. These officers were not properly trained, but they don't have to be in our community. The people of Santa Cruz left, and officers go. His name is Joseph Fontanian. He is an officer here in this goddamn community. You motherfuckers let him go, and he goes down and kills my goddamn dad. He's from this motherfucker. He beat these homeless people. Fire him. You should have killed him. He ended up killing my dad. But on his way to kill my dad, he killed another black man. Another mentally ill man. What I'm saying to you is accountability. What I'm saying is we want these officers to be accountable. We need to be accountable to ourselves. You walk around the community with your head down like you don't see these people, like you don't see her, you don't respect her, and she'll come back and bite you. She'll come back and bite you. You guys care here. You know how many people on campus should be filling this place up. Let's talk about Joseph Fontanian. He was fired for kicking people, for beating people, for harassing people, for violating human rights. He got away from here because you guys didn't put a proper lock on him. You guys need to stand up as a community and understand that anytime that anything happens to that woman, if she's violated, that you must connect with her as if this was your mother.
Don't think because it's not happening to you now, till I go to the court as a graduate at UC Berkeley in the peace and conflict studies department of police brutality. I never knew they were going to take my dad. Had no idea they would take my dad. And here I am talking about Happy John. But we're all united. Yeah, we're all united, just like the people here through Stolen Alive. I'm united with the Garcia family. United with Mr. Hall here, who's selling a shot in the back of the head. God damn it, he's my fucking surrogate father now. I have to depend on somebody who's not even my father, not even my blood. I have to go to him. Because he lost his son, so he sees some of that in me. So please, when people are, the one thing you need to understand is this. Is that if something happens to that black man up here, right, it's just a matter of time for it gets over to the white. See, because this is not an issue of black and white, which they make you believe. That's what the fuck, this is what this whole system's based on. It's a system based on have and have not. Everybody can be sacrificed if you're not in the power structure. Therefore, when the issue comes, where do you stand? Stand with human rights. Stand with human rights. I need to tell you about my dad. My father was an educated, graduated from here. He was all American when he played at MPC. Got drafted by Chicago Bears to play football. Instead, decided to raise his family. Came up here, we went, like I explained to you already, got his bachelor from here. Then he went to Monterey Institute of Foreign Studies. See, this is the illusion that you guys are listening to me, because my father was educated. He was no different than Happy John. Those conditions don't mean nothing to us until we, right now, when we want to go out and make a living. I'm telling you, don't be led down that road. Think as you're going through these doors. He got his degree from Honor Institute of Foreign Studies, but when he was at UC Santa Cruz, he had a nervous breakdown. He was able to recover and get his degree. He continued, got his master's. He was teaching while he was up here. My father taught for 19 years, Monterey Unified School District. Did not matter. Didn't matter that he was a community activist, that when the Black Panthers used to have disagreements within the community, they used to come to our house under candlelight and solve these things peacefully. That didn't matter. It didn't matter that he helped organize the union. What mattered was he was expendable because they seen him as an isolated person. And that's what you guys must fight. And I mean fight with every strength. If someone is gay and they're abused, you must fight. You have to understand, we are all connected. That's the one thing that this system wants you to see. We're isolated. Now, my father, during this day, the police come to his house. First of all, the mental health workers. You guys have to understand, see, this is what I'm saying. We're talking about police, but the mental health workers are the ones that set my father up. So there's more people in this system that are culpable that are actually guilty of this murder. It's not. So don't just look to the police as a part of it. So my father, they knocked on my father's door. Mr. Vine, how are you? I'm fine. Thank you, Teresa Cox. I no longer want the services of the city. Thank you very much for coming. Officer came to check into how you were doing. Fine. Shut the door. He thinks that's it. My father thinks that he goes back and starts cooking. But lo and behold, they went next to him and called the police. We like to, because she was told by her boss that Mr. Vaughn, after 2 weeks, hadn't taken his medicine. My father's not even no quarter. Sometimes as a kid, my father would decide not to take his medication. He never violated anybody else's life. That's his thing. If he wants to do that, that's part of being free in this country. I fought, but according to the attorney, this is a police state. My father, then, this is very interesting. I'm going to try to get to this real quick. Is that what happens is, they call the police. One officer that shows up is a black dude. I knew the black dude because me and him, Lewis Lumpkin, played football together at NPC. We were on the same football team together. I also, this is before he was caught with me, I also introduced him to his wife. So, you know, I had a relationship with this guy, right?
But it turns out that once I left to go to Berkeley, he was harassing my father. But my father was a private person, and so he didn't share those things with me because I would have had to deal with it. Lewis Lumpkin knocked on my father's door. Come out of there, Charles. My father decides he doesn't want to be bothered. He goes out the back, and he climbs on a little shed about this high, sits on his whip on his butt. He's sitting up there thinking, according to the people who were there, sitting on his butt. Lewis Lumpkin comes up on the shed as my father's sitting up on his roof, and he says, come down or I'm going to spray you with mace. My father just sits there. He hollers out, I haven't done anything, don't bother me. That's what he says. That's according to the district attorney's transcript. Well, for some of us, that would be good enough, right? But guess what? Because my father decided to disobey his orders as he's sitting on his butt, he begins spraying with pepper spray. You guys have already heard all the signs about pepper spray. They use it on Mark Garcia. Canisters and canisters on Mark Garcia. Well, my father, he said, and the guy all the time said, come out, we want to help you. I want to help you. I'm spraying the shit out of you, but I want to help you. You get what I'm saying? So, my father was very smart. So my father turns and lays on his stomach. And at this time, they said, he's up on the roof, he has a corkscrew. He has a corkscrew, and he's up on the roof on his butt. And so he's sitting up there. My father turns and lays on his stomach to avoid. He's trying to avoid it now. He really wants to avoid the stuff. So he's putting his head down, but this ain't good enough. He's hollering, leave me alone, he's begging. He's begging, he's not asking, he's not doing, he's begging. Give the man time, he's 60 years old. You give a 60-year-old time when he's sitting on the roof at 9:30 in the morning, he's going to come down in 15 minutes. Just back away. But you know what they do? This is what the guy I went to school with, because of the badge. Badge changes you. The badge gives you this mentality of, I am the executioner, I am the judge. Let me tell you what happens is, this guy who I knew says to the other two cops, one of your killers that you guys let us have up there, and one of another one of our old killers who's been beating on Latinos and blacks and poor people, they got a terrible history down there. It's like a sex school of these officers that have been discharged from other places. So what happens is, he tells it like this. He says, listen, what I'm going to do is I'm going to blow up in this room. And during this time when my father was sitting on his butt, he would get up, right? He would get up when they stopped spraying him, and he would walk close to the edge, and they'd spray him again, and he'd sit down. He did this three times. They said, well, you know what? I'm going to go up here, but if he stands up again, is the exact words that these officers said was Catholic. That's a street word for killer. And so what happened was, this guy comes up on the roof, crouch down, starts spraying him, walking through. So my father's down like this, and he looks, and he goes to the left side. As soon as he lifts up, the officer jumps back onto that shed, this high, and soon my father stands up, bah, 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 bah. Then I get a call, I ain't got no dad no more. Here I am. I don't want to be, I didn't ask to be a part of your life. I didn't ask for nothing. So the thing that we're here for is this. Human rights violations are occurring on a day-to-day basis. The question is, where will you be when it occurs? What will you do? If Matthew Shepard was on this campus and he got beat here, what would you do? Would you watch it on TV? What would you do? So, we got a question facing us right now. And the question is this. You got your local issues that need to be dealt with. Because well, guess what? This is the funny thing. Is that those people that you guys see in office now, they used to be the people who were the people. They used to be the people who used to be down. Okay? The question, they need to be put back in reality because they think you guys are sleeping. Now, I'm going to leave you with this. A friend of mine by the name of DeAndre, he starts like this. He says to me, a lot of them, if in fact you knew when they were going to kill Martin Luther King, what would you do? And I said, I knew who the person was. You knew that. I said, go ahead and ask that question. He says, you knew what they were going to do when they killed Malcolm X. What would you do? And I said, you know, the person Yeah. People are the greatest here in Manila. What you gonna do? Thank you guys very much.
You're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. Calling number here is 427-3772. We are a live show, so you can call in. It's Sunday, November 15th. And you've been listening to a forum on campus held after the memorial to Happy John Dine, shot dead by Officer Connor Carey of the Santa Cruz Police Department about a year ago, on November 12, 1997. Connor Carey suffered no disciplinary consequences. There was never an independent investigation made of the shooting, even though every non-police witness saw no weapon in Dine's hand, not even the toy gun that the officers claimed provoked them to shoot. Officer Carey, that is. The only witnesses that supported the version of Officer Carey were police witnesses, or police-connected witnesses, such as Ben Newman, the catalyst bouncer, in the back of the squad car with the police officers. The so-called Citizens Police Review Board refused to hold an independent investigation, also declined to hold public hearings, and had no early investigation. And Charles Bonds Jr., who you just heard, lost his father in Seaside. He was killed by Seaside police officers after, as you've heard, in that somewhat bad tape, and my apologies for the quality of the tape. I've gotten a new tape recorder, and hopefully subsequent recordings will be better. After mental health and police officers invaded his home because he, quote, wasn't taking his medication, he got scared, went to the roof. They pursued him up there instead of backing off. They maced or pepper sprayed him many times, and then specifically shot him when he stood up, supposedly menacing an officer with a corkscrew. Lots of good material came out of the police violence seminar, both the one on campus that happened on the anniversary of the police killing of Happy John Dine here in Santa Cruz, and the week previous when we had a whole meeting of a number of different relatives who were relatives of others killed, or as I would say, murdered by different police departments who haven't yet been brought to justice. We're again going to be playing those, hopefully, as the days go on. We can get together a loop tape on that issue. What you going to do? Well, it's interesting. The same kinds of human rights violations, of course, are happening every night here in Santa Cruz. People are not being shot through the head, or through the chest, as Happy John Dine was, or through the back, as Brian Andrus was, the man who was intimidated and taking a 4-year prison sentence rather than trying again, spending more and more of his family's resources to fight legally. Essentially, he should have been suing the police department, and the police department should have fired those officers, Sergeant Hennig, Officer Palacio, Officer Berry, Officer Zamenik, who invaded the household on Button Street in March. But they're not, and some of those people date back to Code Blue, the infamous conspiracy inside the Santa Cruz Police Department to beat, even to kill, homeless people that was uncovered in the early 80s and caused a number of firings, as well as the early resignation of then Police Chief Gino Pini. What are you going to do when Steve Argue is in jail, the man, one of the organizers of our rally for Happy John Dine, in jail for selling a street newspaper? Selling Street Spirit, the newspaper that homeless vendors sell. I encourage you to check it out. You can sell it if you're homeless. You can sell it if you need money. You can talk to John Moore, or Job Finder John, as I call him. He's down at front of the bookshop Santa Cruz. What you're going to do? Well, you got to support Steve Argue in jail. You got to support the folks in the streets. You got to call up and let people know. City Council, it's time to end that sleeping ban, put it on the November 24th agenda, or you'll be on the streets giving a very Merry Christmas to the merchants on November 25th and thereafter.
Hi, you're just talking about Steve Argue. I was just downtown talking to the witnesses.
Uh-huh.
And it was interesting. They all said the only thing he did, the most aggressive thing he did, and the last thing he did before the cops tackled him, kneeled on his head, was to point at the cops and tell the cops that the cop was breaking the law by not even letting him sell the the Street Spirit paper. And he never touched the cops, according to the witnesses, and he's being charged with felony terrorist threat and resisting arrest for pointing at the cops.
Yeah, I went down and I challenged the officer afterward, as I mentioned on the show, Officer Garner.
Okay, I didn't know what the officer was.
Yeah, and actually I did exactly what Steve did. I began hawking the paper on the street, and Garner refused to arrest me.
What is that mean?
That means that he had some... Well, it might have meant that he was a little nervous about the video camera that was pointed at him. It might have meant that he called his sergeant and learned that he was wrong, that it is legal to sell street spirit, as Chief Belcher has told Anthony Douglas.
But yet, he sits in jail.
Sits in jail and locked up under, not isolation, but lockdown.
Well, yeah, he's in
on $5,000
solitary confinement.
He isn't in solitary confinement, but he's in...
No, he is. We just talked to him this morning.
Well, yeah, apparently there are two different things. One is where you have an hour out a day, and you are in fact in solitary confinement, but they call it lockdown. Because you're actually in the general population can walk by you and wave at you. Whereas if you're in solitary confinement, which he was earlier for calling a cop a Nazi pig or a Nazi bastard after the cop had drawn him the cop had refused to give him a spoon for his breakfast.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I mean, he wouldn't give him that basic human dignity. Yeah, he's in jail. He's on $5,000 bail. I guess Tony Anthony Bowles, thank you, has agreed to represent him. I'm not sure if that agreement has actually happened yet, but I think that people are trying to patch it up. And he may be coming to court, Steve argued, will either on Monday or Tuesday.
One thing I'd like to say on that is,
sure.
Wasn't pretty good thing to have some money. We should think about raising some money for Anthony Bowles. A lot of my friends out of jail for a while now for almost done. He's not a public defender anymore, and he's representing a lot of poor people and a lot of activists, and he's doing it for dirt cheap. He did my last case for $5.
That's pretty cheap.
He's gonna go broke and probably lose everything he owns for the year.
Well, along those lines, Phil, I'm gonna be bringing a table down to the scene of the crime, that is the crime of police brutality and assault on an innocent person and theft of his property and theft of his First Amendment rights. And essentially a much more serious crime against the community, because when Steve went to jail, other people became afraid to sell street spirit.
Yeah.
And so a paper which sustains homeless people, it lets them, you know, gives them enough money to get off the street out of the cold, to buy a cup of coffee with the dollars that they get from this, it doesn't give them a living, certainly, but it's an alternative to panhandling that, you know, where you get something. You know, that chill that spread across people is perhaps even a greater crime against the community that this officer did.
Well, let me ask you this. Has he frequently homeless persons are not quite homeless right now, would I be able to distribute the paper and take
sure.
the money and give it back to...
Sure, and
I want to keep the money so I'm not homeless, but is there a way that not homeless people can distribute the paper and then give the money back?
Sure, if you want to sell the paper and give the money to homeless friends, that's perfectly okay, and I would be happy to provide you with the paper. In fact, at 3 o'clock I'll be Lincoln and Pacific, which is in front of the Juice World with a table and some street spirits.
A little walk, come down there, I don't know.
Hey, if anybody's listening, if you want to help distribute street spirit, and again, I don't think the officers are going to be stupid enough to pull this again, but if they are and they pull it in that area, I'll be happy to stand beside you and they can take it all the way.
Yeah, well, if they don't, I think that says something too. It says something because they're...
selectively enforcing.
Yeah, if they think they were wrong, if the officer thinks he was wrong, which he obviously does, or he would have arrested any person who committed that serious crime, there should be something in place for the officer to amend that wrong. The officer should be able to get that person out of jail if he later finds out that it was illegal. How can you resist arrest on an arrest that was illegal?
You know, it's been my claim, and I don't know, I haven't researched it thoroughly, but it's my understanding that you can resist an illegal arrest with reasonable force.
Yeah.
It's a risky thing to do because officers have guns and heavy egos and lots of backup and lots of self-righteousness behind them. But if you, for example, a police officer invades your home without a warrant and you shoot him, he hasn't had a probable cause, you're justified in doing that.
Sure.
I mean, that's called defending your home.
Sure. You won't prove it until, years later.
Yeah, probably get shot by his friends.
Arrest is not legal, and it's kidnapping.
Right. It's false imprisonment. False arrest, false imprisonment. Hopefully.
Now, we shouldn't have to submit to crime.
Indeed. That's what we're fighting to do. I'm going to be downtown trying to get people to sign, to get to call in to Byers, Scott, and Kennedy to make sure that the crime of people being abusively awakened and banished from the area they're in because they've fallen asleep or covered up with a blanket, that crime is stricken from the books, and that in order for that to happen, of course, it has to be removed. The first steps have to happen on November 24th. People have to call 429-3550-POUND to do it. I'm going to be downtown asking people to sign a petition and proceed in that kind of process to get it done. We can talk about anything else. If anybody's had any cases of police misconduct that have happened, or musicians being hassled, there's apparently some controversy around this downtown association hiring musicians to drive out street musicians.
They definitely did that. It's hard to prove whether they did drive out street musicians, but they definitely did hire musicians to do something in the fall. I think that's probably overlooked right now. So maybe Christmas or sort of the next shopping season they might do it again.
I think we should form caroling groups, homeless caroling groups, and do a little caroling every day from business to business with the suitable lyrics, and I may have to do some composing around that. I want to try out my voice, Dan. Thank you.
There you go.
All right.
And that was the notorious street singer, performer, and Free Radio Santa Cruz broadcaster, Phil Free, who you can sometimes hear on the Mall, and certainly can hear on Free Radio Santa Cruz, giving us some more information on Steve Argue, who's in jail for selling street spirit. We have another call.
Hi, Flower.
Hi, Flower.
I'm going to speak about it. Am I on the radio now?
Yes, you are.
Okay. Well, I went to a talk at Coconut Grove Thursday afternoon, and I got real sick the following day. I drank some water from the bathroom there, and I see might have been guardians from the cabin here. I tried to get some water, and I'm not sure what I had, but I had guardians in the past, and I know the symptoms also.
What is this? I'm sorry, Barbara. You had what?
Guardian. It's an intestinal bacteria.
How do you spell it?
I think it's G. I'm not sure if it's
Coconut Grove, of course, is the large ballroom that's owned by Charlie Campion's Seaside Company.
And I was literally in the bathroom for a whole day the next day, and I got up a few minutes here and there from the toilet, but I was in the bathroom almost completely the whole day, and then had gas, and thank God I know what to do.
How can people contact you?
Well,
if anyone's interested in helping Flower, they can call the Hub, Homeless United and Friendship and Freedom. And the phone number is very easy to remember. It's 423-HUFF, 423-4833. If you're concerned that there may be some bad water down there, boardwalk, and Flower, just give me a call in a couple of days and I'll let you know if we've gotten any phone calls of folks interested in doing some research. I suggest John Leslie Hernandez might be interested in this. Their son, of course, died from chromium poisoning up in Northern California, and they've recently secured evidence about that and spoken about it quite eloquently at City Council. As a matter of fact, I may have that in the tapes if I can ever find them on my catacomb of old tapes. Anything else you want to say, Flower?
No, that's all for now. So, thank you.
Sure. Thanks a lot.
Bye.
And Flower, of course, is partners with Dan Hopkins, or Dragon's Heart Dan, as I call him, and he's with Sean Alooney, started the City Hall Sleepers protest in 1996, which tried to get Mayor Rotkin and the City Council to make some decent changes in the sleeping and blanket ban laws that would have brought those laws more into line with the Declaration of Human Rights by the United Nations, the Constitution of the United States, common sense of ordinary Santa Cruz citizens, common economic sense, 20th century sort of minimal compassion, but apparently so far without success. We're seeing now if the current City Council is about to go out and yield into the new City Council, whether that new City Council will have the ovaries, I guess it's also the balls, since the most coming in now, to take the steps necessary to realize that you cannot fit 500 to 1,500 homeless people into 28 emergency shelter beds for 8 months of the year, and then for the other 4 months of the year, fit them into less than 200 shelter floor spaces. It's a pretty obvious fact, and it's kind of silly. We have to keep repeating it, but now that we have to keep repeating it, we have to call the phone number 429-3550 and then press the star key and get the City Council members, particularly Scott Byers and Kennedy, to put on the agenda November 24th the sleeping and blanket bans, or we will bring our blankets and our bags and our friends and everything we can find down to Pacific Avenue the day after, and we will stay there during the day in order to greet the shoppers and let them know what's really going on in Santa Cruz behind the glitter and the tinsel and the Thanksgiving lights and the fancy ads in the papers. Behind all that, the real reality each night for homeless people. And hopefully we'll be able to, if we get enough people down there, we can start forming the People's Tribunal that I talked about. The proposal I put forward, instead of having these bogus, completely phony police review boards that don't do anything and hold their meetings in secret and hold no officers accountable and never get their information out to the public and fire the only good members they have or drive them out, we can actually set up tribunals of people who have suffered from police misconduct. Not unfair people, not prejudiced people, but people who had an experience dealing with police misconduct, people who want to hear what the facts are and weigh them and come to decisions, people who will broadcast to the community what the police department is really doing. Not what they like to say they're doing, not what like the City Council wants to believe they're doing, not what Chief Belcher writes they're doing, not what the Citizens Police Review Board turns its back on in terms of what they're doing, but what they're doing. That's what we want to know. And so I think a number of things can happen on November 25th. And as I said, I'm going to take a table downtown today. I had a table 10 years ago, somewhat similar, called the Homeless Table. I guess we'll call this one the Homeless Table too, the Return of the Homeless Table. And I'm going to start taking police complaints and start signing people up, see if they want to do some work on the 24th, the 25th, the 26th. I don't anticipate this is going to be easy. I don't think they're going to put this on the agenda. I think we got to press them to do it. We got to urge them to do it. We can even hope that they might do it. But I think it's going to take some real strong, long, high-profile protesting at a season of the year when it makes a difference, the shopping season. So, if you're interested in this, when we're off the air, and you are tuned, by the way, for those of you who are listening, to 96.3 FM, Bathrop Spears Broadsides. You can call me at 423-HUFF, 423-4833. HUFF is an acronym for Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, a civil rights organization concerned with the rights of poor and houseless people. I also want to announce I have a new Street Shit Sheet out. That's the publication that I used to do regularly, and I've been doing more regularly recently. Issue 161 just came out. It's only a dime. You can get it free if you're homeless. You can sell it if you're homeless. It talks about the violent illegal arrest for selling a newspaper. Happy John Memorial organizer tackled and jailed. And also it has some interesting facts about the common law group. For those of you interested in Take It to a Magistrate, that's one proposal you may remember that our attorney Catnip Kate Wells was suggesting to you earlier. That if a cop presents you with a ticket, for you to sign. You can look at the police officer and say, "Officer, I don't sign that ticket. Are you going to book me into jail, or are you going to give me an opportunity to take me to a magistrate?" And he says, "I'll take you to jail." "Well, you're going to take me to jail while I wait for a magistrate, or are you going to book me into jail?" He tells you he's not going to take you to a magistrate, then you can sign your ticket, and the next day, once we get our forms kind of clear, you can even do this earlier, you can go down hopefully and rescind that signature, and you can demand a better process. And if enough people do that, then perhaps all these tickets that the cops issue so freely, with so little provocation, can be made more costly for the police and for the city bureaucracy to do. One of the reasons they do it is, as Officer Clark said when he stole blankets from homeless people in 1996, rather than take photos as evidence that they were violating the blanket ban. Why did he steal them? Well, Sergeant Clark said, "Because I can." Well, boy, you know, our time is running out, and I want to get in touch with Donnie Dice of the Tenants Rights Union. Before I do, I'm going to read parts of this letter that Donnie wrote to Mayor Celia Scott on October 15th. I got a copy of it from the City Council staff. It's really a great letter. I'm going to read it to you, and I'm hopefully going to get a hold of Donna and get some comments. "I wish that you were continuing as mayor. I've been able to count on you to be patient, concerned, fair-minded, and reasonable in the matters brought to the City Council while you've been mayor, as well as before as a member of the City Council. Your more compassionate views toward the homeless issue and housing shortage are especially needed now as real estate goes up, rents go up much faster than wages, and available housing remains desperately short for long-term residents of Santa Cruz who are faced either with the specter of becoming homeless if they are lucky they have a car or a van to sleep in, and trying to maintain their jobs and children's schooling, or completely uproot themselves and move out of the county where they may become bankrupt if forced to give up their jobs and unable to commute. Long-term residents of Santa Cruz include construction workers, mothers with children, clerks, hospital workers, artists, photographers, mechanics, volunteers, musicians, activists, disabled veterans. In fact, all those that make Santa Cruz a colorful and beautiful, diverse town are moving to places like Sacramento, Auburn, Mariposa, Riverside, San Diego, Modesto, etc., because they are being forced out of rentals here and there is no place for them to move. The severe UCSC housing shortage, the student housing shortage, has continued for another year, and Tenants' Rights Union would like to see something done about this. Berkeley, as you know, is also going through a similar crisis. Could the two city councils work together on this? The cases that come to us are heartbreaking. Those that can hang in can usually get the time to move by negotiating with landlords for our support. But those that can't even pick up the phone because they are so depressed are now probably sleeping in the woods or a vehicle or begging for floor space from a friend. Our core group includes three paralegals. We continue to need volunteers to give everyone who calls something to hang on to. It's interesting to note that last year Beach Flats was supposed to have, quote, minimally standard housing, according to Linda Gardner. However, now the Chronicle cites 60% of Beach Flats housing to be substandard. What is the truth there? The Chronicle has written for 20 years about the severely substandard housing here, yet code enforcement continues to be insufficient, and some members of the Board of Supervisors remain unenlightened with such statements that eviction does not lead to homelessness, or criminal issues are more important than tenant landlord problems. I say that eviction may not always lead directly to homelessness for everyone, but I have seen tenants move to their vehicles and storage either in and out of housing, or stuck in a camping out routine, having to use their checks for food, gas, and vehicle repair. More and more people continue to remain homeless as they age. This migration will stop if our community is not growing. Small businesses suffer as well as homeowners under foreclosure. As far as tenant-landlord cases not being important, then why the landlord is fast-track in court by forcing tenants to respond to 5 days during unlawful detainer? Why do they get legal preference? Well, that, of course, is the value Americans have placed upon the supremacy of private property over the needs of the community. A 30-day notice is not enough time for someone to get the money to move and find a place. Yet many landlords do not believe this because they are isolated from being subject to economic conditions. We continue to inform Sacramento's Center for Law and Poverty about tenant stories and news articles in support of tenant legislation. We urge that the City Council consider the eviction protection ordinance proposal Marco and I presented in January. We need regulatory control of increasing rents of landlords who violate fair business practice laws and at least good cause for all evictions. We are available to further discuss the types of cases we work with and analyze the data we've obtained in monitoring and sending postcards to almost 800 tenants, mortgage holders, and businesses. We hope that our in-the-trenches knowledge will be available to other organizations in the community as we have established good relations with Legal Aid, Legal Forms, and the Law Library. Why not consider allowing people with registered and working vehicles to park in commercial areas to sleep at night? A similar ordinance was finally passed in San Francisco, I am sure you're aware of. Actually, she's referring to Eugene, and unfortunately that ordinance has sunsetted. Vehicle dwellers are a subclass of people who must work at least part-time and be very resourceful to survive. These are the people who work at such low-paying jobs they cannot afford to pay rent, yet they are needed for service jobs in the community. Tenants should not be forced to pay market rate. This housing crisis must be immediately addressed before another winter sets in. Definitely so. If you haven't already, call 429-3550 and then push the star key and ask them to put the sleeping ban on the agenda so people can use their vehicles this winter to sleep in without being harassed. Many landlords evict needlessly, greedily, or because they just don't like someone else living in their property. Many do not care what happens to their tenants upon eviction, are unwilling to settle unless a jury trial is imminent, and self-help measures of intimidation.